We heard last week about postulated links between common viruses and Alzheimer's, and also the inflammation Alzheimer's link. And we received the odd listener inquiry as well regarding a mention we made of vitamin D and calcium supplements. We decided to follow up with a conversation about vitamin D and its connection with inflammation, especially as it hasn't been a winter when many of us have seen much sun, and this last week came as a relief when it popped out again. There's new research out of the University of South Australia, and Professor Alina Hipponen is the director of that university's Australian Centre for Precision Health. We've discussed before with Alina aspects of being overweight and also how cardio health influences coffee consumption. Hello, Alina.
Hello.
Genetic research out of your university shows a direct link between low levels of vitamin D and high levels of inflammation. Can you elaborate?
Yes, so we conducted a study where we used information from a large database containing nearly 300,000 participants. So what we saw was that increasing vitamin D did reduce inflammation, but it only did so in people who had very low concentrations, while for anyone else with more normal levels, there was no effect.
Having adequate vitamin D concentrations may also reduce complications arising from obesity and also reduce the risk or severity of chronic illnesses with an inflammatory component, Alina?
Yes, it is important to have enough of it to allow for the body to function as intended, including the immune system. So chronic low-grade inflammation is a harmful component of many diseases, and ensuring that we are not severely vitamin D deficient is something that we can help to do to prevent related consequences.
How do we do that? I mean, people take, for example, calcium and vitamin D, I know, to counter vertigo, for instance, and vertigo is a pretty common ailment. And studies showed that if you were vitamin D deficient, it worked better to reduce the vertigo. Given that we survive through winters, many of us, without much vitamin D from the sun, how would we know we were deficient without getting tested?
So I'm not sure if there's a 100% way to establish that one isn't vitamin D deficient without testing, but as we are lucky enough to live in a sunny, sun-rich country, whether it's New Zealand or Australia, it is very unlikely that levels would go very low in normal people who are living in normal active lifestyles and able to go outside. But of course, during wintertime, sunlight is enough. Synthesis is more difficult to obtain through sunlight, and supplementation may be helpful. Most diseases are, of course, quite complex. And in addition to vitamin D, they will be affected by many other things in our lifestyle, as well as our genetic background. And I simply consider making sure we are not vitamin D deficient as one thing we can do to help our bodies to fight off the disease. However, it's of course not something that it's going to be curing or preventing all diseases. When one is looking at the randomized clinical trials on vitamin D, often the efficacy of supplementation is tested in volunteers who have healthy normal levels of vitamin D concentrations. Indeed, if you try and conduct a study where you would include individuals who have severe vitamin D deficiency, no ethical committee would allow you to do so because they would know that it might lead to harm. So, of course, when we are testing the efficacy of supplementation in people who actually don't need it, it is not surprising that it will not have no benefits, and in some rare cases, it could even be harmful.
Yeah, high levels of vitamin D can increase the risk of falls and fractures and also precancerous polyps, I was reading.
Well, yes and no. So the studies on falls, they are very interesting. And there are some relatively big trials where vitamin D has been given to prevent the risk of falls and fractures, but where to surprising the researchers, they actually saw that those postmenopausal women who received the treatment started falling over. And that was not something that was expected at all. But one of the key issues with these trials has been is that the vitamin D treatment there has been given using so-called bolus doses. So that means a dose where a large amount of vitamin D, even large enough that can cover the whole monthly requirement, is given all at once. And if I recall correctly, one of the big studies where they observed the increased risk of falls, their dose was 50,000 international units. So the daily recommendation is something around 400. So, you know, this is a big dose. Increasingly, it appears that when you are giving vitamin D in such massive doses, what it can actually do is shut down the vitamin D metabolism. And when you don't see the benefits of increasing concentrations, but you see the totally opposite, which is something that we think that may explain the increased risk of falls in this type of trial. So it wouldn't be something that you would expect to see with just regular daily vitamin D supplementation with normal doses.
No, I understand. You'd have to self-medicate to a terrifying degree for those concentrations to be present. But we did have a guest on the show once saying she takes a 1,000 IU daily supplement through the winter. And the older you are, I was reading, the more vitamin D you need. And assessing that is tricky as well. And vitamin D deficiency is common still, isn't it?
Well, for starters, I think that the 1,000 international units per day during the winter time, I think to me that sounds totally reasonable, and it would be unlikely to do any harm. Whether it's always needed, that's a different question, but it would not do harm for, unless there was a very specific underlying disease. And with the aging, the ability for the skin to synthesize vitamin D goes down a bit. And when we may also spend less time outdoors, perhaps both would increase the vitamin D requirement. So this is something that is good to pay attention to. However much you stay in the sun, you will not get too much vitamin D because the vitamin D production system satirizes and no longer produces excess while overdosing is possible by taking supplements. That said, vitamin D supplements are generally very safe, and you have to go to very high doses over prolonged periods of time to reach toxicity.
What do you do through the winter, personally, can I ask?
For South Australia, where I live, it is typically recommended that per each week you should catch 2 to 3 hours during daylight sun, in a daylight sun, to get enough vitamin D. If it's very cloudy and if it's very... I don't get to go outside enough, I start to feel guilty, and then I take around the 1,000 units for a few days until I forget it.
which is probably a regimen a lot of people are on, and that will see them through the winter. I think the advice here is, you know, at least get a couple of decent periods of sunlight a couple of times a week. So most people are okay. My last question is, when should people start to worry about the amount of vitamin D they are getting in, with what kinds of conditions, if any?
So I think that this is clearly an important problem for some subgroups in the population. And the most concerned I am for all the individuals who, for example, are bedbound, living in institutions, or who, for whatever reason it may be, do not go outside enough to get vitamin D from the sun. So that is a very concerning kind of like group of people. And if you are concerned that you are not getting enough sunlight exposure, and or if it happens to be a very cloudy winter, then it is totally reasonable to take a bit of vitamin D, and it will not do you any harm.
There's research to be done, isn't there, still into vitamin D? Had you heard about that vertigo, the obviation of vertigo link if you bump your levels up?
I did look it up ahead of this. There is a lot of research and a lot of large-scale trials that are currently coming out, and many of them are showing maybe some effects, usually no effects, and when there is no effects, then often it is in a situation where we are giving supplements to people who actually don't need it. So, the discussion and research remains very active, and there is a lot to digest there.
There is, isn't there? All right. Very good of you to give us your time. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Professor Alina Hippinen, our last guest today.